Thank you for everyone for being here. I actually didn't expect to see these many people, and so it's quite a pleasure. I've seen a few names here that are unknown, and I actually didn't realize that people wanted to come to this. But thank you. I really appreciate your presence and your attention to this. When Felix was introducing me, he said that we met just last year when I was interim director of the Black Film Center and Archive, and it was a very fortuitous meeting. In other words, if I had not served in that role, I probably wouldn't have met Felix. And so it's quite interesting because it was when I took him to lunch, as a matter of courtesy, as a director, that we started talking about common interest, and he mentioned, and I mentioned my book. And so these are how that developed. And so thank you for making this happen. What I intend to do is not so much to recap my book, such, but to sort of describe what I call the general conceptual framework for the book itself. I think that the book has been with me for so long. Now that recapping it really feels like reading it the 15th time. And it's because it's a fairly long book, I also think it's fair not to bore my audience with those details. And I think it's also makes sense for people to figure things out. But I'm going to speak about the concept and focus on one, especially just for the purpose of this talk. And so what I intend to do is to talk about that concept. It's mediation. It's one of the three, and I'll say that in a moment. I'll say more about that in a moment. And I'll show a few clips. There's a soundtrack. There are several soundtracks to the novel, to the book, but I'll use only one just to give people an idea. And I have all those ones on a PowerPoint slide that I'll be showing in the course of my presentation. And at the end, I hope to hear questions from you. Of course, I'm happy and willing to answer any questions about the book, though they may not be detailed or full enough, but that's because I really want you to read the book and then form your own opinion and not take my word for it. In any case, so that's what I intend to do. I'll be reading, and so I have my tablet here. The idea, of course, is I'll have to be sharing screen and then moving from one tab to another. So there may be a bit of awkwardness, but I think I have everything sort of settled out, and I discussed that with both Natasha and Felix in a moment. This presentation describes the conceptual framework of my new book, Everything is Sampled, which comes out March 2023 from Indiana University Press. In writing the book, I found three concepts to be useful in addressing the central question in the book. And the question is, what theories or modes of reading are available in thinking about reconfiguration within the digital culture of new textual productions in the myriad of forms to which we give the name art? Rather than a simple recap of the concepts, themes, figures, and analysis in the book, what I aim to do today is to present a small portion of how I found my ways around that theoretical question. So this is the look of the book. I think you can people may have seen the image. It's an artwork. The cover is an artwork by the Nigerian artist Obiora Udechukwu, who was gracious enough to let me use the cover. And on the other side of the page is just the contents to give you an idea of what the outline of the book is. This is taken from the final galleys that my publisher sent to me before the book was finalized. So, as I said, I had a few clips to share from films that I talk about in the book, but also one of the soundtracks. I call it a soundtrack because there are several. One of them is a song by Fela, but it's in my play, my MP3 player, and it's actually difficult to use here. So and also, in order not to give you too much, to take too much of your time, I thought I would share this, which is a soundtrack from Hubert Ogunde, a Nigerian theater artist. It's called Anyomo. So I'll just play it. It's relatively short, and it also I've timed it into my talk, total of just under 3 minutes, I think. Concepts in the book are diachronicity, translocality, and mediation. Of these three concepts, I focus on the last one for the sole purpose of this presentation. Two African writers, Ayikwe Arma and Wole Soyinka, have been my primary reference points in this undertaking. Ayikwe Arma, in his description of a largely socialized process through which the rendering of historical accounts by griots in epics are mediated as works of narrative, poetic, or dramatic art, and Soyinka in his reflections on the equally complex process of transforming quasi-religious rituals into festivals and subsequently dramas. It is that process, one which occurs in a social context that I characterize as mediation. In my book and in the present talk, I think of mediation beyond the standard understanding of it as a balance of opposites, to focus on the more nuanced sense in which the process of artistic composition is inherently, though actively and dynamically, mediated. In choosing one out of three concepts, my aim is to demonstrate that the relationship between diachronicity, which pertains to time, and translocality, which denotes space, is not one of opposition, since one cannot be productively contemplated without the other, but of an order of experience that is immanent in the third concept. I found this perspective to be useful for a productive engagement with the history of the arts in general. Specificities across geographical locations allowed, in ways that thinking about media, either as old or new, simple or complex, untimely or anachronistic has not afforded me. I think that this might be useful for those scholars interested in developing studies through which to relate such a general history to influential hypotheses by scholars of media, such as Lisa Gittelman, John Guillory, and the late Miriam Hansen. Mediation, as I think of it, and in addition to the remediating power of the electronic or technological apparatus, enables a reconsideration of the questions of unequal exchange, cultural appropriation, cultural imperialism, and associate terms in postcolonial studies, and also in artistic practices. I want to actually stress that while I'm thinking about this in terms of what scholars do, but I also think of it in terms of what artists and writers and authors can do, because apart from my own position as an artist scholar, the book has also sort of given me ideas I never thought about how to actually compose a novel. And I can say more about that when it comes to the Q&A. In The Eloquence of the Scribes, his 2006 semi-autobiographical account of the sources and resources of African literary history, Ayikwe Ama draws on the work of historians and writers such as Amadou Hampateba, Jibril Nian, and Cheikh Anda Diop to make a case for a diachronic view of African arts and letters. From Hampateba in particular, Ama extracts a useful example of the training of the griot, or jelly in Bamana, as a socialized educational system in which the first 42 years of a professional historian's life were dedicated to formal instruction, practice, and the acquisition of authorial and authoritative voice. For this purpose, according to Hampateba, the life cycle of an individual candidate was considered to fall into three successive periods, each 7 years long. The first three sets of 7 years period, roughly speaking, infancy, childhood, and adolescence, were reserved for formal instruction. In the next 21 years, the young griot was encouraged to acquire practical experience and to deepen the learning already acquired, while still being considered unqualified to speak in an authoritative voice. After 42 years, the griot becomes a counselor and an instructor while continuing the educational process. It is useful to compare this training process, in particular, the conception of the different phases of the trainee to the conception of the Greek or Roman systems, such as rhetoric, dialectic, and grammar, the elements that John Guillory in The Genesis of the Media Concept has identified as constitutive of the former institution of literature in the modern European history. From this standpoint, Ama advances perhaps the most theoretically liberating argument connecting the artistic role of the jellies to the socio-political situation for which the training had prepared them. The training of the keepers of collective memory required the development of high-level mnemonic skills. Tricks of memory, refined until they attained an altogether artistic sharpness, turned recitation of historical and pseudo-historical narratives created for the purpose of legitimation into works of narrative, dramatic, and poetic art. What the society auditing such output makes of them matters. And indeed, Ama views such artists as manipulative and manipulable mouthpieces of the ruling class currently in power. In fact, the ironies in the crises of the problematic historical events are ironed out to the extent that a given artist is gifted beyond question, and a history thus distorted is subject to correction or further distortion, depending on how the pendulum of political power swings. However, none of these sociological details can destroy the creative act with which that process of mediation has entered into a dialogue. If carefully explored through a comparative contextual analysis, the argument that Ama has put forward is generative of interpretive resources as media in theater, film, music, and other forms of creativity. In my investigations, I found that it is when we ignore examples of mediation such as this, whether verbal, figural, or embodied, that we make our analysis susceptible to untheorized and prejudicial postulations like the unnecessary opposition of rhythm to melody in African music, for instance, or as we can see from the two clips that I'm about to show, the reduction of highly controlled expressive acts to juju contexts. And by juju context, I am referring to a trope that some scholars of what became Nollywood used to understand what was going on in the work of mostly Yoruba traveling theater people who were making films in the 80s, especially from the mid-80s before Nollywood exploded and sort of became the kind of film practice that all parts of different ethnicities in Nigeria began to participate in. The first clip is from, let me just quickly say this, the first clip is from the 2005 version of the film Efun Shetan Ewura, directed by Tunde Kelani, and the other is from Joseph Ramaka's 2001 musical, Kamenge, which I'm sure many people are familiar with. So this is where I just want to put this there, and then I'll go out of presentation mode so I can find the screen to share.
Irawe ni o o mi le mi lako sa be ni irawe ni mi toto amo sale omi le mi gbe ki no toju emi omi o ti gbe
iro lopa irawe ke en gbe le omi ori omi ni irawe de duro
a je pe mo doju oronu won leke omi won do sibata won si leke odo
ah o gba gbe pe no oju oron gbe ayo sibata lo sibata wa e bu se tan e ja are ti sere ko mi odo inna ti mo
lato sa iwo gbagbe ni alakan ni mi esega
alakan ni o
be ni
ohun na lo je kono lo dojuru bi ni alakan iyori si se re nduwa yi o wa da bi epo alakan abi ta lu aje fe epo alakan se be
osoluwa e
ai epo alakan ba se se be ohun kankan fun ara re e ro ni
e ba la ngbari wo lato sa o tonu wa alakan wo kódà bó bá dejo ọrọ alákan gbèsè
epo rẹ ló kó sí ọ lójú nínú ojú orílẹ̀-èdè mi kókútẹ tí ọdọ lèmi látọ̀ọ̀sà á ṣe
ṣọ wá mọ̀ wípé òkúta kan lè dára rẹ
irọ́ lọ pa ìlú ìbàdàn ló sí mi nídìí mo ṣí dé mo ṣílé ọmọlé alákanlẹ̀ mọ̀.
Okay, so that's the end of that clip. So here's my point, that the exploitable resources in the presence of the griot in cinema is not limited to the figure of the artist intellectual, as the Senegalese filmmaker Ousmane Sembène has been famously characterized, but that it also extends to the expressive skills of a given performer. In the first clip, we have two adversaries engaged in verbal duels, a battle of magical spells, and the rivals in the other films dance to show who has the better skills. However, what matters is that both scenes are entertaining to the extent that the skills gained through specific training manifest themselves as usable artistic resources through the dramatic routing of a rival. The critic can do justice to the display of such skills in a film by keeping Amar's theoretical idea in mind without ignoring how the cinematic uses of those skills function as entertainment in cinema. Now I turn to Wole Soyinka. Often overlooked, among the author's writings due perhaps to his scholarly tone in an intellectual climate that expects little of such rigor of writers of the writer's prose works. This essay offers Soyinka an opportunity to comprehensively reflect on the complex ideological transformations through which traditional funerary rites and religious and secular festivals became theatrical forms in West Africa. And the essay is titled Theater in Traditional African Culture, Survival Patterns. It is a nuanced history of theater in the region in the colonial period, an account of, according to Soyinka, cultural resistance and survival. Soyinka uses the essay as one to make a case about theater as a constitutively spatial artistic form with provenance beyond a nationally segmented geographical space, and also to develop an argument about what he calls the fundamental unity of the arts. As fate would have it, the essay came out of the research that the playwright undertook with a Rockefeller grant in the early 1960s. And the literary scholar Bent Linfors has provided a revealing reading of the archive of application process through which Soyinka received the grant. The central claim in the essay is that culture is often the first form of social expression to come under assault in a situation of domination, such as colonialism or religious conversion, but that it is also a site of resistance to domination. This is an argument that Amika Kabra has made in another context. Soyinka views drama as the form that best exemplifies this condition. Drama is created and executed within a specific physical environment. It naturally interacts with that environment, is influenced by it, influences that environment in turns, and acts together with the environment in the larger and far more complex history of society. The history of dramatic pattern or its evolution is therefore very much the history of other art forms of society. And when we consider art forms from the point of view of survival strategies, the dynamics of cultural interaction with society becomes even more aesthetically challenging and fulfilling. A dual process of attenuation and resurgence guides cultural practice in the theatrical forms that Soyinka examines, and development in mid-19th century in what became Nigeria provide a useful example. Just as the Islamic onslaught against the semi-religious performance genre of the funeral rites by the court masquerades, Egungun, became successful following the disintegration of the Oyo Empire that had guaranteed the genre's vibrancy, that Islam-inspired attack received additional boost from the hostility of the new Christians. These Christians, quote, did not content themselves with banning just the dramatic performance, but also placed their veto on the indigenous musical instruments, the very backbone of traditional theater, end of quote. Yet, it was not long before the church, again, became the site of cultural resurgence through the secular use of biblical themes, the earliest modern guise in which traditional theater, now transformed in the 60s when Soyinka was writing or doing his research, now transformed into traveling troops, was to reemerge. Similar changes occurred elsewhere on the continent. An example that Soyinka found was in the practice of formatting Christian hymns according to the pattern of traditional musical forms in the old Buganda Kingdom in Uganda, and oftentimes in the service of religious promotion. These were clearly situations of religious restrictions, and Soyinka goes further to describe the manner in which the survival of art accounted for itself under the hostile, watchful eyes of the missionary colonizers and the subsequent cultural denigrators. Using the Afiko Igbo masquerades of southeastern Nigeria as a case study, Soyinka develops further the argument about theater as a decisive category incorporating diversified forms and consciously differing qualitative enactments. Two components of the Afiko masquerade, the Oje Ogu and the Okumpa, are also qualitatively different, one balletic, the other mimetic. Though part of a larger festival, with Okumpa representing the climax of the Oje Ogu dance moves, the enactments are less about ritual as such, as are as such and are oriented toward performance that requires the appreciation of the audience. But that audience interest is purely aesthetic. Whatever symbolism may be contained in the actual movement of the Oje-Ogu is of no significance in the actual judgment. What the audience looks for and judges are the final points of leads, turns, control, and the general spatial domination. End of quote. By contrast, the Okumpa is a performance of satirical mimesis, the main action of the masking being a rendition of events known to the audience and performers alike, including genteel and gendered critiques of social habits, such as the antics of a self-absorbed maiden who turns down every suitor. The serious sketches in the performance are dramatization for which competition is king. The process of wooing the suitor itself is a contest of various kinetic, gestural, and verbal displays. Soyinka's point is that elements of theater are present in these two strands of a masquerade performance, even though the visual elements exist for primarily aesthetic purposes, and that the festival in which they make their appearance are repository of multimedia. I want to stress that. He calls them repositories of multimedia. In the spectacle are also drummers, chanters, ringleaders, and an aesthetically invested spectatorship, what we'll call participant observer, so to speak. In the documentary, Culture in Transition, based on the conception by Soyinka, who is also the narrator, there's a moment where the observation of such a performance develops into poetry, written poetry, that is, as is evident in Soyinka's own Idanre, another poems.
Talks alone.
So that's Soyinka's voice
you're hearing. Talk alone. When he leaps, Ogun forbid, it's the hunter's goodbye. Tail of a leopard swishes like a lariat. Nails of a leopard, a two-edged razor. Eyes of a leopard, red glowing embers. Ogun, stay behind me. I am not a leopard who walks all alone on silk cotton slippers. He of the fur-shielded talons is the forest lone walker. I will not be alone. Not among men, not among women. I will not be alone. I will not face the world alone.
Okay, well, that's, you want to see Soyinka in his early 30s. If you want to see him, that's him. Anyway, so that's the example. And as I said, if you anybody who actually has read Soyinka's early poems, Idanre and other poems very closely, can actually see that there's a connection between his observation of this particular Egungun performance and what later became poetry in the book. Following his analysis in that article, Soyinka makes two submissions that are relevant to my argument about mediation. First, he argues that in studying an art form, it is clearly more appealing to look into extant material for what may be deduced as primitive or early forms of that particular art, noting along the way what factors have contributed to their survival in the specific forms. Second, he makes the statement about method that will continue to astonish cultural critics for years to come. He states that instead of considering festival from one point of view only, that of providing in a primitive form the ingredients of drama, we may even begin by examining the opposite point of view, that contemporary drama, as we experience it today, is a contraction of drama, necessitated by the productive order of society in other directions. There are implications for these statements beyond the given case study, and Soyinka goes even further, drawing comparable examples from Burkina Faso, Southern Africa, Senegal, as well as modern dramatic styles in both the elite academies of the Victorian era in Lagos and the so-called Nova Scotian vaudevilles that inspired the concert party genres of the late colonial periods. Although ideological blind spots in the religious and political domains will remain, the long march of artistic mediation in African cultural history would likewise persist, fostering the emergence of various traditions in markedly discontinuous way. When Soyinka writes that, quote, by 1912, the secularization of theatrical element entertainment in southern Nigeria was sufficiently advanced for the colonial government to gazette a theatrical and public performance regulations ordinance, which requires that performance groups obtain a license before going before the public. We see a foreshadowing of what will transpire in the renaming of the Nigerian Censors Board as the country made a complex transition to what we now know as Nollywood. Soyinka later demonstrated creative instances of this act of multimediality, most memorably in the character of Eleshinoba, the protagonist of Death and King's Swordsman, who the stage direction describes as a man of enormous vitality who speaks, dances, and sings with that infectious enjoyment of life, which accompanies all his actions. And in Eleshinoba's elaborate performance as a singer of tales of the North-eyed bird. Such are the processes of mediation whose details will not be easily apparent in a given dramatic piece or in critical analysis of it as performance or printed text. Yet the overall artistic quality of the dramatic performance is inconceivable as a mediatory act without these processes, which in Soyinka's examples include the integration of sculpture and dance in a Egungun performance, the condensation of multimedia in an annual festival, and the secularization of biblical themes in mid-20th century traveling theater repertoires. I'm now coming to the conclusion of the talk. In bringing this talk to a conclusion, I would like to speculate briefly on what this understanding of mediation might mean for a comparative theory of the arts by returning to the musical track that I shared earlier as one of the book's soundtracks and offering an observation on methods as pertains to Ama and Soyinka. The track, Anyomo, by Hubert Ogundi, one of the figures Soyinka discusses in the final section of the essay, was first composed in 1972 as part of an opera. It is under 3 minutes in playing time. Through repertory performances, it went through various changes to the point of becoming the basis of a film of the same title, released in 1987. By that time, according to Ebon Clark, the scholar who has written a book about the theater of Hubert Ogundi, the theater artist had generated enough capital to move for his move into cinematography. The process through which a 3-minute song became the basis of an opera, then a feature-length film, cannot be productively understood if explained as a simple shift from opera to theater and then to cinema, each imagined as a hermetically discrete form. That process is dynamic but also discontinuous. And this point leads to the second observation that I want to make as I conclude. It seems to me that in their dedicated attention to ideas of continuity, which they have conceptualized through a communal notion of time, that is the idea of the living, the dead, and the unborn, Ama and Soyinka shift attention from discontinuity, which I think is best exemplified as a fragment. That song, Anyomo, is a fragment. A fragment that is at once wholesome and generative of other wholesome forms, such as a film in a different context. In other words, one important lesson I took away from working on the project that results in the book Everything is Sampled is the nature of fragments in history as well as in art. If the arts are envisioned as a means of reconstructing anything, Africana history, economic relations, or of coming to terms with other things such as unequal exchange, uneven development, cultural restitution, you name it, we need to pay appropriate attention to that which exists in fragments. This understanding of the status of fragment also informs the way I approach artistic composition, for art is made from multiple parts, from old things, non-existent notions, and shared imaginings. Thank you.